Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Welcome back to our continuing coverage of the trial of Scott Peterson, the Parkland School Resource Officer. Let's go to the courtroom for segment number 3 of today.
Jurors entering.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Come on in. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Come on in. Once you're back in those same seats, you may be seated. All the parties may be seated. Ladies and gentlemen, those of you that are using the notepads, I'll give you a moment to get those notepads back out. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, when we took our lunch break, we were in the middle of the direct examination of the witness. We're going to resume at that point. The witness remains on the stand under oath. Ms. Gomes, when you are ready, you may proceed.
Before I start, I'm just going to show you a photograph. Here, may I approach the witness?
You may.
Thank you. We can take the screen off, Judge.
You want the
I do want the
witness to say.
Yes, the witness. And, you know, I'm actually going to show this to you first. I apologize. I'm showing you what has been pre-marked as states are. Please take a look at that photograph. Can you identify which one of the two gentlemen we see there is yourself versus the defendant? And is this a fair and accurate depiction of where you were standing on February 14th of 2018?
It is.
At this time, the state moves into evidence what's been pre-marked as states R as states 18.
Any objections?
No objection.
Without objection, states R for identification will now be in evidence. That is states exhibit 18.
And on this photograph, could you please tell the jury, are you, I know it's kind of hard to see on the screen, but are you the man on the left or on the right?
On the left.
And is this where you were standing next to the defendant?
Yes.
And is that the location that he then stood throughout the duration of the time that you saw him?
From what I saw, yes.
Your Honor, permission to now play for the jury what's already in evidence as states 6, F, 8.
This is F8 of State Exhibit 6?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, you may proceed.
Officer Best, if you can explain for us on the left, if you help pause for me, on the left screen, is that the area that you stood with Deputy Peterson?
It looks like it, yes.
At this time that those officers are positioning themselves, you are all under the impression that the shooter may very well still be inside the building, correct?
Absolutely.
And can you describe for the jury where you were?
I believe at this time I was still next to the defendant.
And are those the officers that you then join and assist in entering the stairwell eventually?
Yes.
You can play. And when those officers enter, and you can see that officers have started entering the building, describe for the members of the jury what's going on in your mind at that point.
It's pretty much what I explained earlier. We knew, or I should say, I knew that this group of officers were on one side. There was another group of officers on the other side. There was some radio communication. There was some yelling back and forth between all the officers. And I was just waiting, imagining that there's going to be some sort of contact, some sort of conflict between the shooter, the group of officers, and if he comes out the side that I was standing on, the south side of the building that I was going to be engaging, and if he goes out the other side, that hopefully there was somebody on the other side to do the same.
Now playing what is already in evidence as stake 6F13.
Thank you.
you turn the cameras on?
The TVs can be on.
Yes.
Okay. Very good.
Your Honor, is it okay if I stand here so I can?
That's fine. You may proceed.
Bestman knows gunshots are going off. You have not arrived yet at the campus, correct?
Correct.
And do you recognize on camera the defendant?
Yes.
And that's where he was standing when you encounter him?
Yes.
And what's the time on the screen right now?
10:24 p.m.
You're not on campus at this point to hear the gunshots that are going off, are you?
No, I'm not.
I Is this the same behavior that you witnessed from Deputy Peterson?
It is.
What you see here?
Yes.
Let us know when you recognize yourself on screen.
I think I might have just went by to the left on the top over there. That looks like Sergeant Kozlowski with the shorts and I.
Okay, and what is the time on screen now?
2:34 p.m.
And when you approach, is the defendant still standing in that same spot behind that pole that we see?
Yes.
And how are you both standing together?
Yes.
And when you walked up to him, you said that, repeat what it is that you said to him, and I don't.
I said, hey brother, what do we got? And he said, shots fired, second or third floor.
Now we can kind of see some shadows. Can you tell us what it is that we, if you recall, what it is that you're doing from behind this pole?
Verbally yelling over to Sergeant Kozlowski and the other group that were on the other side.
What is the defendant doing while you're doing that?
Standing there. I believe he may have had his firearm in his hand, but standing there, I know he was touching his radio a couple of times, but that's really it.
Now this goes on for 45 minutes. I'm going to skip, so we don't have to sit here the entire time. Can you read the time on the top of the screen for the members of the jury?
3:10 a.m.
Examination, go.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Best. Is it Officer Best? You were in the Coast Guard, so I wasn't sure exactly what your title is.
Mr. Best is fine.
Mr. Best? Okay. This isn't the first time we've met, correct?
Correct.
You came in for a deposition back on January 3rd of 2022, correct?
Yes.
And there was a court reporter present to memorialize what you were telling me, correct?
It was virtually, but yes.
You knew that you were being recorded.
Yes.
You knew there was a court reporter writing down what you were saying, correct?
Yes.
You knew that what you were saying was going to be transcribed, correct?
Yes.
And you knew that you would have an opportunity to then read it for accuracy, correct?
Yes.
And you'd use it to refresh your recollection so that potentially years later, you can then testify accurately in front of a jury, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Let's start off with, at the time, you were with Carl Springs Police Department, correct?
Yes.
That is a different agency than the Broward Sheriff's Office, correct?
Yes.
They have completely different radio channels, correct?
Yes.
And the information that officers from Carl Springs Police Department are getting would be different than the information that BSO is getting, correct?
I would agree with that.
Okay. And when officers are given police radios, I'm assuming that it's not optional to have to listen to them and monitor them for information, correct?
Yes.
In fact, they tell you that information is everything, correct?
I would agree with that.
And so the primary source of your information, if you're not present with someone face-to-face, is to be monitoring your police radio and listen to what dispatch and what other officers are sharing, correct?
Yes.
Now, Carl Springs Police Department, since they're on a separate radio than BSO, you can't hear what BSO officers are saying, correct?
At that time, correct.
And you also, they couldn't hear what you guys were saying, correct?
Correct.
Which means they also couldn't hear what your dispatcher was telling all of you, correct?
Yes.
The only way that you join forces with radios is by something called patching, correct?
Yes.
And you know about patching because on the scene, you were yelling, let's get these radios patched, correct?
Correct.
And that was said right after DeVita, Lieutenant DeVita, yelled the same thing. Let's get these radios patched, correct?
I don't recall him yelling that. I remember yelling that at him.
Okay. Did you take any steps further to see that the radios were patched at any time?
I'm unable to. From a patrol perspective, we can only request it. That's way above our level.
Who did you specifically request that to?
I don't recall if I specifically requested it, but I know I was yelling at Lieutenant DeVita to get them patched. He's an executive officer, so presumably he would have the ability to make that request as well.
Now, you yelled it. You didn't just request it, correct? You yelled it.
Correct.
Because that was something that was so important to be done, correct?
Yes.
Tell the jurors why it's important for my client's radio to be patched with Coral Springs.
Well, it works both ways, either way. When you have multiple agencies, we learned this from September 11th, way, way back, and somehow we still have issues with this today, but this particular example, if you have Coral Springs, for example, in the Broward County Sheriff's Office, an officer or a deputy can make the request to their dispatch to patch the channels. When they say patch the channels, it's just a fancy way of like a conference call, for example. So anything anybody says, whether it's dispatch, a deputy, or an officer that is on that channel, they can hear the same information. Similarly, with the Coral Springs Police Department, you might have detectives utilizing one radio channel and patrol officers utilizing a main radio channel. If the detectives get into a critical incident or a foot pursuit or something significant, the dispatchers may patch the channels through. So instead of having somebody in a high-stress situation having to switch the channels, the dispatchers can do that for you, and the two channels are merged.
You would use the example, I thought it was pretty good, about a conference call, correct? Like a conference call?
Yes. It might not be the best example because it's not an active, continuous.
Right.
But when you press the button to speak, yes.
So it would be unfair to hold someone responsible for material discussed during a conference call unless they're on the conference call, right?
That's a confusing question given this situation.
I got it. When you arrived at the scene, it was after the shooter had gone, correct?
Yes.
You arrived and approached Officer Burton, as we saw in the video, at 2:34 p.m., correct?
I'd have to look at the time, but I believe so.
Remember when the prosecutor asked you what time it was, you said 2:34, correct?
Yes.
That's when you approached Burton, correct?
Yes.
And you approached Burton shortly after you arrived on scene, correct?
Yes.
Now, where were you coming from before you arrived on scene?
The Coral Springs Police Department.
How long did it take you to get to Marjorie Stoneman Douglas?
I would have to see the dispatch time, but it's 2 to 3 miles away from the police department. It's a straight shot down the road. Maybe a couple of minutes.
Okay. And you're one of those officers who make sure that you monitor your radio continuously, correct?
I try to do the best I can.
Sure. And especially when you're going to what you believe to be an active shooting situation, you're going to pay close attention so that you can get real-time intelligence, correct?
Yes.
And that's what you did on this day. You made sure you were listening because that information is critical, correct?
Yes.
You don't remember any time during the day when you turned off your radio, correct?
No.
You don't remember any time when you said, I'm not going to listen to dispatch at all, correct?
Correct.
So you would have heard at 2:26:31, dispatch saying that there is an active shooter at Douglas, correct?
I would agree with that, but it's important to point out it's technology. So this happens all the time with agencies all across the country. When there's a transcript from the radio and people say, this is what was said, not every radio works 100% of the time. So there are times where you can be standing next to another officer and one radio has the radio traffic, the other one does. It's technology, it's not foolproof. But I would agree with what you're saying.
Okay. So you would also then have heard dispatch say, we can hear them in the background. Our 911 lines are blowing up. Were you aware that you're...
I remember that.
Okay. And by blowing up, you understood that to mean that people were calling in like crazy, 911, correct?
Yes.
And those calls, the 911 calls you knew from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, were going to the Carl Springs Police Department, correct?
Yes.
You also knew that they weren't also going to BSO, correct?
I did not know that.
Okay. And they inform you at 2:26:31 that we have multiple units on the phone. Some are getting EMD. It is confirmed. What is EMD?
I don't recall what you're referencing.
But do you know what EMD stands for?
If you tell me what it stands for, I'll let you know if I know. But
I genuinely don't know. I was asking you. You don't know?
There's acronyms for everything. I'm sure it means something. It's not coming to me.
I got you. So 2 minutes later, you would have also heard Burton specifically announce on your radio, white male ROTC uniform, burgundy shirt, correct?
I remember that, yes.
So before you even get to the scene, by the way, which was 2:34 p.m., correct?
Yes.
We're talking about 6 minutes earlier, you're hearing a description of the specific shooter that was on campus, correct?
Yes.
And then dispatch repeats, white male, ROTC uniform, burgundy shirt, correct?
Yes.
And you remember hearing that before you get to the scene, correct?
Yes.
And then, about 25 seconds later, at 2:29, Burton announces on the radio, last seen in the three-story building north parking lot. You heard that, right?
I remember that, yes.
And you assumed that they were referring to this guy, this white male, with the ROTC uniform with the burgundy shirt, correct?
Yes.
And he was last seen in the three-story building. And you took that to understand to mean the one that you were in front of, the 1200 building, correct?
Correct.
All right. And then right after Burton says that, at 2:29, you heard someone say, D-28, have him advise if he's still shooting. And then Burton says, I'm with Douglas SRO getting information. You remember those dispatch transcripts?
D-28 would have come out as Delta 28, which is a sergeant.
Okay.
And it does vaguely sound familiar to me.
Okay. At the time, though, that would have been fresh in your mind, correct?
Yes.
You have a pretty good memory. You hear things, you remember it, correct?
I try the best I can.
Okay. And then 47 seconds later, dispatch, your dispatch, Carl Springs, advises that there are three victims down in room 1216. You remember that?
I remember dispatch saying there were victims down. I don't remember the room number. If you're reading it, I'm sure that was said. It's just not.
Okay.
I can't specifically recall the room number, but I remember hearing victims down.
Let me read the whole thing and see if you remember it, okay? Because I stopped.
Objection, Judge Hearsay.
Yeah, that's his name.
Do you remember them specifically advising you that it was in the freshman building? Do you remember those words?
It sounds familiar. I can't say 100%.
Got it. If they said it back then, that would have been something you would have listened to, correct?
Objection, speculation.
Well, the speculation objection is overruled. Sir, I don't want you to guess. If you have personal knowledge, you can answer the question or you can say, I don't know.
I don't recall.
And you would have paid attention to the radio when you were informed that an officer indicated that the person had a long gun. I see one, looks like a custodian down in front of the building. We're trying to locate, we don't know where he's at. Do you remember hearing that transmission?
A lot of this sounds familiar. I can't definitively say verbatim word for word.
Got it. Do you remember Burton saying, and this is again a couple minutes before you arrive at 2:31:31, I will let you know where it is. It's the three-story building, is at the northeast corner. It's considered the freshman building.
Yes.
You remember Burton saying that, correct?
Yes.
That's again, you're adding that information to your real-time intelligence, correct?
Yes.
So when you get to the scene, you naturally would have shared that information immediately with my client when you met with him, correct?
No.
How come?
He's present on the campus and It's his school, so I would have assumed he probably was the one that maybe provided that information, or he at least knew the information.
If I heard you correctly, you just said you assumed that he had all of that information already, correct?
Of course.
When you arrive on the scene, you're thinking of the plus one rule, right?
We always like to do that, yes. It's to try to be safe.
Because even though you knew all the information we just described, you still welcome the possibility that there were other shooters on the campus, correct?
It's good practice, yes.
Why is it good practice?
You don't want to ever get complacent. It's kind of like what I mentioned earlier, where we knew that the shooter was gone, but the sergeant had specifically told everybody, stay alert and be cognizant there could be other shooters present. If you find one weapon, you should search for a second weapon. If you find one shooter, you should search for a second shooter. It's a way to avoid being complacent, and it's just standard practice across the country for law enforcement.
Did I hear you correctly? You're saying that you knew that the shooter was gone?
Not at that particular time.
Well, okay. So when you get to the scene, you're thinking that there could be multiple shooters in different locations, correct?
When I arrived on the scene, I definitively thought there was at least one shooter, and then for good practice, I was cognizant that there could be additional shooters.
Gotcha. And so naturally, with all that information, knowing that the shooter is inside the 1200 building and that there are people injured and or dead, you ran into the 1200 building, did you not?
Not immediately.
Why?
I'll explain it again. I mean, like I explained, so we had a team of officers on the east, we had a team of officers on the west, and where I was standing, we didn't hear the shots. We thought that the shooter was inside the building. I was prepared for the shooter to be confronted by one of the teams, and we didn't want the teams to cross each other or potentially shoot each other. So as they're clearing floor to floor to floor, my mindset at that specific time was, let me stay where I'm at in case the shooter jumps out of a window or comes out that side, hoping that there was somebody on the north side of the school doing the same thing.
So you're standing right by my client's side while all that's happening, correct?
Correct.
And you've seen with his gun drawn, correct?
I believe his gun was drawn.
And it looked to you that he was genuinely trying to figure out in real time where the shooter or shooters were located, correct?
I'm not going to say yes to that.
Well, he wasn't staring in one direction, correct? You saw him staring in all directions, correct?
I saw him looking around, pacing around. I can't say what he saw or speculate what he was thinking. I was more focused on the school. I asked him one question, he answered me. We didn't have conversation.
But specifically in regard to where you saw him looking, yes or no, did you see him looking in all directions, yes or no?
I can say yes to that, that's fair.
Now, by looking at the 1200 building, you can't tell by looking inside anything, correct? You can't see through the windows, right?
I was unable to see through the windows, yes.
Right. So to know where the shooter or shooters are located could not be done by looking into the window, correct?
I don't want to say yes to that because he specifically told me second or third floor of the building, so I mean by that account you would have to ask him. If you hear noises, you can reference where you're hearing the noises from. It might not be specific, but
you assumed that he was getting his intelligence from his school radio because you saw him on it and then relaying information to the officers present, correct?
I never said that.
Page 30. Question. You knew.
Objection or improper impeachment.
Yeah, that's the same.
Didn't you?
So what line are you referencing?
Page 7. Didn't you? say on a previous interview, in a previous interview, that as you approached, he seemed to be on his school radio and communicating with people from the school who might have been looking at video, surveillance video.
Right, that's not the same question you just asked me a minute ago. Okay. Yes, I said that.
Okay. And just so we're clear, as you're standing there looking in through the windows, there'd be no way, if you're looking at the second floor windows, for example, there's no way to tell anything that's going on inside the second floor windows, correct?
Objection, speculation.
Well, that's overruled, sir. If you have personal knowledge, you can answer the question. Go ahead.
It's not a yes or no answer. I'll answer it if you'd like.
Okay.
From where you're standing, you can't see what's taking place in the hallway or in the classroom, for example, but if somebody approaches one of those windows, you could potentially see what's taking place at the window.
Let me clarify. From where you're standing, right next to my client, and you're looking up at the second floor, you can't see in those windows to see any shooter or kids, correct?
Correct.
And then if you're looking at the third floor, there would be no way to know that there's a shooter or kids in there, correct?
Not visually.
And so that's why, when my client's announcing second, third floor, you assumed, especially because he's using his radio, that he was speaking with someone in the video room, correct?
Objection, counsel testifying.
Yeah, that's sustained. Go ahead, sir, ask another question.
Why did you assume that my client was talking with someone on his school radio who was in the video room? Why did you assume that?
It's a two-part answer. The first part of the answer is, he's obviously got a school radio, so it's reasonable to think that he's talking to somebody on the school property.
Mm-hmm.
The second part of that is, I would never assume all of the information is coming directly from a radio and only a radio. We're reasonable people. You see things, you hear things, you look around.
Sure.
There's other things. I don't like how you're inferring that I'm assuming everything is only coming from the radio, because that would not be accurate.
You describe the scene as chaotic, correct?
Yes.
You also used words like, it was very emotional, correct?
Certainly.
The situation was also very fluid, you said. What does fluid mean? Describe that for the jurors.
Fluid is, it's a term that's frequently used, rapidly developing, changing. It's not staying the same.
So 1 minute you think something, and then it can easily change based upon what you learn, correct?
Correct.
What you see?
Yes.
What you feel?
Yes.
When you arrived, you were worried about sniper fire, correct?
Yes.
That's a reasonable thing to be concerned with under the circumstances that you were confronted with, correct?
Yes.
And you were standing next to my client. Did you feel that the sniper fire threat was gone, or you also felt it at that point?
It was a little bit of a concern. I was watching the windows, knowing that I could be in the line of fire.
Okay. Which, again, you were literally within a foot or two from my client, correct?
At times, yes.
And it was a pretty good place to take cover because there's like a concrete wall right there, correct?
Yes, I would agree with that if that's what your goal is, sure.
You saw a lot of people frustrated with their police radios, correct?
Mostly from the sheriff's office, but yes.
Let's talk about that. These were BSO deputies you saw being completely frustrated with their radios, correct?
Correct.
What led you to believe that they were frustrated with the functionality of their radios?
There was a specific example. I remember being in the stairwell, and there was a BSO, I believe a SWAT deputy, that went past me up the floor, and there was another BSO, also I believe a SWAT deputy, that was on the lower floor to the side of me by the door, and the one up top was yelling down, he can't get through on his radio, can you yell this over? I don't remember what it was, but he said, can you yell this over? And I relayed the information. I don't remember what it was, but that's an example.
At the end of the video, the prosecutor, I think, mentioned to you the time, and you said 3:10, or she said 3:10, correct?
I believe so.
You were still there at 3:10 next to my client, correct?
I saw the 3:10. I don't know if that was the time when I was still standing there the whole time or if I went back and forth.
At no time did you join the team of people that went in through either the east or the west side of the building, correct?
No, that's not true.
What's that?
No, that's not true.
Okay. How long did it take before you left my client's side to then go into the building?
I would have to look at either the video or FTLE's report, but it was when that information was passed about the shooter on the third floor coming down to the second floor wearing a gas mask.
Okay. Can you give us an estimate of how long you think you stood by my client's side?
If I would estimate, it would be a couple of minutes.
Okay. And those couple of minutes, during those couple of minutes, at no time did you tend to any of the wounded inside of the 1200 building, correct?
No, I was outside at that time.
But there's no question that while you're standing there next to my client, you knew kids had been injured in that building, correct?
At that particular time, the goal was to locate the shooter. When that goal changes to a rescue mission, that's when that changes.
So the answer would be yes. At no time, while you're standing next to my client's side, did you go in to tend to the injured children?
Correct.
And in retrospect, if you knew that my client didn't have all the intelligence that you did, you would have shared that with him on the scene, correct?
Objection, relevance, and speculation.
Yeah, what's the relevance of that?
How important it is to transfer information to a fellow officer that he would have done that.
That question's already been asked and answered. Relevance, objection, sustained. Go ahead, sir, ask another question.
Ultimately, the information that my client was conveying while he was talking on his radio was turned out to be of little value because the shooter was already gone, correct?
Objection, counsel testified.
Yeah, that's the same. Go ahead, sir.
The shooter was gone when my client announced second or third floor, correct?
To me, yes.
A few more questions. The prosecutor asked you on direct about telling people stay away from the 1200, 1300 buildings, stay 500 feet away. And isn't that what they train you to announce when you think that people may be harmed by sniper fire?
I've never received that training. Okay.
Is it not prudent if you think that bullets are going to harm people in an area to keep them away from that area?
Innocent civilians, yes. Fellow law enforcement, no.
And this was around the time that parents were picking up their kids, correct?
That would have been the last thing on my mind. I to this day, I don't know what time the dismissal time is.
Got it. You do recall my client did have his firearm in his hand, correct?
Objection asked and answered.
That's the sting.
And the weapon that you had on you was what?
Right.
Okay. Why did you choose a rifle over a simple pistol?
My firearm's in my holster on my duty belt. The rifle was easily accessible from when I parked my patrol vehicle, and it's definitely a far superior weapon system than a pistol or a handgun.
Explain to the jurors why they might not be familiar with guns.
A rifle's a long gun. It's got this would be a personal opinion, but it's just better ammunition, safer, you can shoot at a more accurate, greater distance than a handgun or a pistol.
And you had a bulletproof vest on, I'm assuming?
Yes.
And why do you wear those?
Department policy.
And also, if you get hit, probably saves your life, right?
We hope so, yes.
And you saw other officers taking positions of cover, correct?
I don't recall specifically seeing that, no.
Well, when you initially arrived with, was it Kozlowski?
Yes.
How do you pronounce it? he wasn't standing in the open. He was kind of making sure that he would protect himself because you said you were concerned with sniper fire, correct?
Do you mean Officer Burton?
Well, we'll get to Burton, but weren't you there with...
I showed up with Sergeant Kozlowski.
Correct.
He wasn't doing what you just described. He were running north towards the building.
And did you see what position he took when he arrived closer to the building?
I believe we arrived right around the same time and we both ran north. He was giving direction to other officers, but I don't recall him taking the position that you're describing.
Where did he stop? Did you see where he went?
We made contact with Officer Burton and then he went back towards the other side of the wall.
Kozlowski did?
Yes.
Okay. So he took a position behind the wall?
Yes.
Okay. And also Burton took a position of cover, didn't he?
I lost visual of Officer Burton. You'd have to ask him. I'm not disagreeing with you, but I didn't maintain a visual of him.
Okay. Sir, thank you.
Thank you.
Coming further.
Based on that, any redirect?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Before your involvement on scene, do you have any knowledge as to whether there were issues with dispatch or the radio before you got there?
Just standard Broward County politics.
Are bulletproof vests available for any law enforcement officer that chooses to wear one?
Yes.
Is there anything stopping a police officer from wearing a bulletproof vest if they chose to?
No.
Which officer on scene was the source of real-time information when you arrived?
The defendant.
Was stimulus the determining factor for you on whether or not to enter that building when you arrived on campus?
No.
What was the determining factor?
The information that shots were fired from the second or third floor of a specific building.
Let me clarify. Was stimulus the reason you didn't enter the 1200 building when you first arrived? I understand you ran.
Yes.
Okay, explain.
This is, with policy, you typically, there are procedures for everything. Usually, it's written as black and white, and then there's the terminology of it being gray. This is a gray one because on an active shooter, when you hear shots being fired, you are going to the building, you were going to the shooter, you were going to stop the shooting. But we had information that we believed the shooter was present in the building, but we didn't hear gunshots. We've trained for that as well, but it's one of those, so it was a little bit confusing, but we had a very definitive plan, and that's what took place.
If you can't tell where the shooter is, what do you do?
Well, you have to try to find him. We believe that the shooter was somewhere on that campus, and it makes no sense to just stay put. You have to start looking for the shooter.
When the information came that the shooter was still inside the building on the third floor, possibly coming down to the second floor, did the defendant join you in entering the building?
No.
And nothing else, Judge?
Based on that, any recross?
I do.
Go ahead.
I just want to make sure I heard you correctly. You thought that the shooter was still in the building when you arrived?
Yes.
And you still didn't think that it was necessary to go right in right away?
I explained why, with the two teams on both sides.
Nothing further, Judge.
Okay. State, is the witness excused?
Yes.
Sir, you may step back. Thank you very much. Is the next witness the out of order witness?
Yes, Your Honor.
So, ladies and gentlemen, again, just as I did with the defense exhibit, I believe that was yesterday, by the agreement of the parties, the state typically will put their case on first, then the defense puts their case on next. Because of a scheduling issue with the defense witness, without objection from any of the attorneys, we're going to press pause on the state's case. The defense is going to call a witness right now because that witness is available right now. And then we're going to go right back to the state's presentation. So that being said, Mr. Igarsh, when you are ready, you may call your first witness.
Thank you, Your Honor. The defense calls Melody Hertzfield.
Good
The defense is calling this witness, Your Honor, preserving all of our rights for motions.
Yeah, this is not pending any motions at the conclusion of the state's case.
Thank you.
Ma'am, if I could have you come all the way up here to the witness stand, please. Once you reach it, but before you have a seat, you can just stop and look at me. Raise your right hand. You swear to tell the truth, all truth, nothing but the truth. Please be seated. And once you are seated, if I can get you to scoot that chair all the way forward as far as it will go, can you please state your full name and spell your full name?
Melody Herzfeld, MelodyHerzfeld.
Mr. Igarsh, you may inquire.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon, Ms. Herzfeld. Thank you so much for coming in. What do you do for a living?
I'm a teacher.
And where do you teach?
I teach at Stoneman Douglas High School.
How many years have you taught there?
Well, now this year is past. Next year, starting, it'll be 20 years.
Do you enjoy being a teacher there?
Yeah.
And what do you specialize in?
I'm a theater teacher.
And you're in which building?
I'm in the 700 building.
Which room are you in?
710.
And how close is that to the 1200 building, if you can estimate?
Like from here to that wall, like maybe
okay.
50, 60 feet.
Okay. And the room 710, which you're in now, that's the same room you were in on during the shooting?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a yes?
Yes.
How long does it take you just to walk over to the 1200 building?
A couple seconds, like
okay.
Maybe 20 seconds.
And you're on the first floor?
Yes.
And you had a large class that day?
Yes.
Why? How large of a class?
We had like a very large theater program, and we had about 65 kids there that day.
Is that normal to have that many kids?
Yes.
It is? And what were you guys doing before the fire alarm went off?
We were rehearsing. So we were in our classroom rehearsing. We scooch all the tables and chairs back and music on and rehearse our scenes.
For like an upcoming show?
Yeah, we were rehearsing for our children's theater program that we do every year.
Okay. And there was a fire alarm earlier that day, wasn't there?
Yes.
And tell us what happened when you first heard the fire alarm earlier that day.
We exited immediately, because that's what we're supposed to do.
Okay. And later on that day, was it unusual to have a second fire alarm in one day?
Yes.
Tell the jurors about that. What was your thought when you heard the second fire alarm?
To be truthful, I stopped everything and said, hold on, we're not leaving, we have to finish the scene. And just to delay, because I thought if I just delay a few seconds, that maybe they'll come on loudspeakers and say, okay, don't evacuate, because that is typically what would happen.
Okay. And the fact that it was Valentine's Day, did that factor into anything?
Yes, it was just like a very exciting, wonderful day. It was really like a beautiful day. It was perfect and perfect weather. Everybody's excitable and exciting in the room, so it was a great day.
They never called you back in after that second fire alarm. You're hoping that they would, correct?
Well, they did. I mean, a couple of things transpired after the second fire alarm.
Tell the jurors what happened.
So once the second fire alarm happened, I said, hold on, nobody leave. I was actually videotaping the kids in the scene. I stopped recording that last bit of the song. And I said, just hold on a second, let's just finish the rest of that scene. And because it was only like maybe a minute or so left of it, you know, with teenage kids. And then we finished up and one of my students said, come on, Herzfeld, we gotta go. I'm like, okay, let's go. And it's really hard to get them out of the classroom. And I knew there would be stragglers. So what I do traditionally is stand to the door, open the door up, have my clipboard with all the kids' names on it. And I'm counting heads and I'm getting the kids that are first out the door and they're skipping and playing, running across the grass, taking the short way, which I don't like because their feet get grassy and dirty. And I'm still trying to get the kids from out of the back room. They're kind of trying to delay because they figured it's just going to be, we have to come back in and they're lazy. And maybe about 20 or 30 kids were out on the grass and I hear evacuate, evacuate. So I'm like, oh, okay, gotta keep going. Come on, let's go. And then I hear like fireworks going off.
Let me stop you there. Let me back up.
Yeah. Okay.
First, just so we can paint the scene. Do you recognize what's contained in this photograph?
Yes.
Okay, tell us what we're looking at.
It's a 700 building.
Okay, which is the 700 building?
Oh no, that's 1200 building.
Right.
700 building's over there.
This is over
here?
Okay. And is this the west side or the east side?
That's the west side.
Okay. Let me show you another photograph. Do you recognize what's contained in this photograph?
That's in between my room's right there.
Can you point to where your room is?
My room is right here.
Okay. Would it be to the left? Can you point to the left of the pole?
Just left of the pole, yeah.
Okay. And show us where the 1200 building would be.
It's here.
So the photograph of the west side of the 1200 building is over there. Okay. And show us where the kids were walking out.
You can kind of see where they trample here, right? They were about out to about here.
Okay. And you're pointing them walking in which direction? Is that an easterly direction?
Towards our stage door. We have a staging area where we're supposed to go. And we usually go down that hall and make a right. But they're going the shortcut and they went across the grass and we stage out here.
And would that have been walking towards where ultimately you see Scott Peterson?
Yes.
We can play the video now. What?
Again.
While we're getting this mark, you can just play the video. As long as the kids can handle someone.
Mr. Killer, what is the exhibit that's going to be played?
It's going to be 13, Your Honor.
It's going to be F-13 of State 6?
Correct.
And everything can stay on for that?
Yes, this time.
They're going to play it on the screen. I want you to, we're all going to watch, and I want you to just describe what it is that you're seeing. Just describe what you see here.
Okay, so now I see my kids coming out.
Pause a moment. Okay.
First, there was another class there. That's not my class.
Okay.
The kids coming in all the way in the far right. I think that's Alex.
Okay.
I think. And Dylan.
So are you starting? You speak up. You didn't hear
which is it. I think that's Alex and Dylan. I'm not sure who's in the front of that line there.
Okay, so we can keep going.
And they're walking and they're getting towards the grass. And I don't know.
Pause for a second.
Yeah.
Okay. What did we just see there?
So they stopped, and you can see they're all like facing. This is so amazing. I've never seen this part of the core. I see them all looking.
Let me stop you. The core reporter needs to hear everything that you're saying.
Oh my gosh, I'm sorry. I see them all looking towards this way, which I've never seen this part without their faces covered, I don't think.
Okay. So what are you seeing?
So I see my class. I remember what I see there is them turning and running towards to come back to my class. But it's funny how they're all looking in this direction.
What do you mean by that?
Because again, like it makes sense to me.
What makes sense to you?
Because of that's got to be when I heard what I thought was firecrackers, and it's from that direction.
Okay, what direction are you referring to?
Towards the football field.
Okay, let's talk about that now. Just finish with the video if we could. If you see anything else that you wanted to comment on.
What was that? Was somebody falling down?
Yeah.
Do you know who that was?
I just saw Dylan picking him up.
Okay, we can pause it. We can take that down. Thank you, Steve.
So, tell us now what happened that led up to you hearing a firecrackers, or what you thought was firecrackers.
Well, like I said, we were rehearsing in the room. We start exiting. I hear evacuate. I'm making the kids leave, counting heads. You count heads when they're leaving so that you know how many you get when you get there. And then I heard what I thought were firecrackers off in the distance, and it sounded like it was coming from the football field. And then I heard like a loud booming sound. Like the only way I could describe it was like somebody had like a garbage truck and like some big metal containers dropped off the back, and it was like a loud reverb kind of sound.
Okay, let me break that down. All right, first, you said it sounded like firecrackers.
Yeah, because it sounded like a, you know, like that kind of sound.
How many initial firecracker sounds did you hear?
Maybe just like one spray of them, maybe, like that.
And
letting the kind of sound.
And if I heard you correctly, you identified it coming from the football field, correct?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. The football field is east or west of where you're located?
West.
Let me have you show the jurors. If this is the 1200 building, this is a 1300 building, this is a 700 building.
Yes.
Do you recognize that as a football field up here?
That's a football field.
And that's where you thought the sounds were coming from?
It sounded like it was coming from that direction, yeah.
Okay.
And in the distance.
And would it be fair to say that there's hundreds and hundreds of yards between where you were and the football field?
Yes.
That is not a short distance, correct?
No.
Did you ever think the shots you heard were coming from inside a particular building?
No.
Did you ever think those shots were coming from inside the 1200 building?
No.
No doubt in your mind?
No.
And do you see Scott Peterson when you hear those shots?
Yes.
Tell the jurors what happened.
He was standing in front of the building.
And
on the direction that we were going in, and I was sending my kids towards him. I wouldn't send my kids towards him.
How close did you get to him?
I didn't move from my door, but the kids got like halfway there.
How close would you say you were from him, where you were at the door?
I was probably, again, like, logistically, like, the same distance it took to go straight across to the building is probably approximately the same distance that it would take to go to the front where he was standing, because he was out on the sidewalk.
Okay, so where you are right here at the witness stand.
Yeah.
Where approximately would you put Scott? Where would he be located?
I would say maybe a little bit farther than that white wall.
Okay. So just beyond the white wall?
Yeah, I was able to see him. I knew it was him.
Okay.
I'm Greenleaf.
And who's Greenleaf?
He's a security specialist. He was a security specialist at our school.
Was there anything about the sound in terms of an echo at all in that area?
Of that sound of the firecracker?
Yeah.
Well, it was just like a very loud boom sound that was like a reverbing kind of sound.
Okay. And when you say reverbing, explain to the jurors what that means to
you. It's like a hollow kind of sound, you know?
Did you see anybody anywhere when you're looking down at the 1200 building?
My kids.
Other than that, anybody coming out of the 1200 building?
No.
Did you see what Scott Peterson did in response to hearing those sounds?
Well, I don't know if he was responding to those sounds, but at the same time, and because I was sending them there, I could see him like talking to his walkie-talkies or something.
Okay. Did you know which one either is police?
No. Know?
Okay. Shortly after you see him talking on his radios, did there come an announcement at all?
Then it was like, the kids go out, evacuate, hearing the sprays of the sound, of the fireworks and that booming sound. Then I hear code red, code red. I hear Mr. Porter get on the loudspeaker and I hear code red and I'm like, oh my God. And I'm just like telling the kids to hightail it back into the room.
How quickly from the time you see Scott Peterson on his radio to hearing the code red?
It was like seconds. It was literally seconds.
And tell the jurors, code red, the purpose of code red, what does that communicate to teachers?
That tells you like it's an active shooter.
And what are teachers supposed to do?
We're supposed to lock down the room and hide and get everybody accounted for.
Are you supposed to bring your keys outside the
Absolutely.
Room?
Absolutely. I had them. I always wear a fanny pack, and I had everything that I needed in my fanny pack, thank God, that day, and that was it.
Why would you ever not want to leave your keys in the classroom?
Because you get locked out.
And what happens during a code red?
You gotta find coverage, and no one's gonna answer a door for you. I mean, they shouldn't answer the door on a code red.
And so then the kids came back into your classroom.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you waited, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now, you've worked with Scott Peterson. I mean, you worked with him for years, correct?
Yes.
And how would you describe him?
He was a nice man. He was responsible at school, dependable. Likeable.
You wouldn't describe him as lazy, would you?
No.
What else was he doing on campus that you knew of?
Like sometimes, like when we hold events, because I'm a theater teacher, we have lots of events, he would make sure that we'd have coverage for security. He's actually covered my events, I think, sometimes as well, so long ago. He would do, like driver's ed course, he'd give the special cards out for the kids that, you know, did well in their driver's ed course. It was once a year, and he's like, can I get the auditorium? No problem, that kind of thing. He was, you know, a happy-go-lucky person. He was friends with everybody in the front office, and, you know, you could always ask him for help if you needed. I always felt like I could, I guess.
Did it ever seem to you that he wouldn't get his hands dirty?
No.
Did it seem like he was a coward in any respect?
It's irrelevant, Your Honor.
No, that's overruled. Go ahead, ma'am. I think you already did, but you may answer the question.
Did you ever see him break up fights?
Yes.
And did he ever do that without having backup?
Yes, there was no backup.
What do you
there
mean
was
by
no
that?
Backup. Like there, when you're in the middle of like big things in a school with teenagers, it happens really fast. So a couple of times that I actually saw him, he was alone taking care of making sure kids were getting separated and physically handling them to do whatever they needed to do.
Okay. I appreciate you coming in. Thank you so much.
Okay. Cross-examination, go ahead.
Thank you. Yes, sir. So you just testified that Mr. Peterson would break up fights at times, correct?
I haven't seen him do that.
That's because he's the school resource officer, correct?
Yes.
And he is the only individual on campus with a firearm, correct?
I think he had a firearm, yes. I'm pretty sure, yes.
Now, you talked about he would provide security and he covered events and he would do drivers at classes. Is that because he was the school resource officer?
I don't know.
Did other officers who weren't school resource officers come on and do driver's ed classes?
That I don't know. That was the only one that I ever heard of doing that.
Okay. The only one you ever heard doing it was the school resource officer at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas?
Meaning that was the only person that I ever knew that did that sort of thing at our school. I don't recall any other teacher or resource officer do like that sort of a thing.
Now, you testified it was Porter who announced the code red, correct?
Yes.
Who was Porter?
Mr. Porter was our AP at our school.
And AP is a?
And an assistant principal.
And he's the assistant principal in charge of what back in 2018? Was it?
I security? Have to believe it was over security because he also did like our training for code red.
I'm going to show you a map here.
Okay.
Ms. Hertzfeld, I'm showing you what's already been previously entered into as evidence of state's composite 17. Do you recognize those buildings?
Yes.
Okay. And could, you can actually utilize the, it's like a touch screen.
Yeah, I see my car.
You see your car, is that what you said?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm gonna clear this for you. Now, can you mark, and you can just use your finger to do so, approximately where your classroom was on this, in the 700 building?
There-ish.
Okay. Now, you earlier testified that during the second fire alarm, you never really left the area of your door, correct?
I didn't.
You did not, yes. We're just talking about you here.
Yes.
And you also testified that you saw Mr. Peterson, correct?
Yes.
Can you mark with a big X approximately where you saw him?
Here.
Okay.
So this, that's the street, but it was in that area.
In that area over
yes.
there. Okay. And for how long would you say you saw Mr. Peterson?
A few seconds.
Okay.
Like visually. Yeah.
And when you saw Mr. Peterson, what was your thought? That it was a fire drill?
Wait, I thought everything's okay.
And did you think everything's okay because he's the school resource officer?
He was at ease. He didn't look, he was at ease, and he's been out there before when we go over here. We that's, used to go over there.
That's your allotted area where you're supposed to go?
In that approximate area, so I just figured everything was fine.
Now, you're familiar, you had heard gunshots before. February 14th of 2018, correct?
No.
So it's the first time you ever heard gunshots?
If that's, I didn't even know what they sounded like, no.
Okay, but you heard noises that day that you now know are gunshots, correct?
No, that's what they sound like all the time, yeah.
Okay. And you testified that you thought it was coming from around the football field area?
Yes.
Okay. When you came out of your building, were you facing the 1200 building?
I was facing him.
You were facing, so you were facing kind of, I guess this would be northeast. Is that correct?
I went back, the door opens out to the courtyard. So I had my back up against the door, so I was facing towards him.
Facing the
Mr. Peterson.
Okay. Now, I'm gonna ask a sensitive question here. Your left ear.
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear out of your left ear?
No, my left ear is profoundly deaf.
Okay. So the ear that was towards the football field, you're profoundly deaf.
My ear that was towards the football field is deaf.
Okay.
My good ear is perfect, and it was towards the room.
Towards the room.
Mm-hmm.
How long would you estimate that you were outside your room right there?
You in my ballpark. Doorway?
Yes, you can ballpark.
It was like 30 seconds.
Okay.
Like it was just a short period of time. That's, you know, you're counting kids as you're going. So
your attention really was more on your where the clipboard and where you check it off names, or how does that work?
Counting heads, I saw him, so I knew everything was okay. And I start going and I'm watching them go. Because I'm like also annoyed that they're going on the grass.
You're watching the kids go?
Yes.
Okay, so you glance over, see Mr. Peterson, then you're watching the kids make their way across the grass. Which irritates
you. And watching the kids, yes.
Yeah. Hear the loud noise?
Yes.
Hear over the PA, code red from AP Porter?
First evacuate.
First evacuate, then AP Porter, code red over the
yes.
loudspeaker. Rush all the kids back in.
Yes.
Now, you earlier said that you were kind of sending the kids over to Mr. Peterson. Is that because, in the direction of Mr. Peterson? Is that because as the SRO, as a school resource officer, you thought he would protect them?
I didn't think of it that way. I thought of it more of, he's there, everything's okay. Because I didn't think anything was happening.
Once you realized something was happening,
then it was just, as soon as I heard that, it doesn't matter who's out there, we're coming back in the room.
Do did you think the school resource officer would take care of whatever was going on?
Yes.
And why is that?
Because that's what they do.
They do, meaning they provide security to the police officer on campus?
Yes.
Now, have you been part of training in Code Reds, either by the school board or by MSD themselves?
Yes.
Okay. And did these include like PowerPoint presentations?
Yes.
Did you attend the one in January?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And there were representatives from the school board, police, as well as Mr. Peterson there?
I think so.
Okay. And in those types of classes, you were taught what to do during a Code Red?
Yes.
For instance, the keys, that you keep your keys on you, you lock your door.
Yes.
That you take a hardened position.
Yes.
Your classroom happened to be a little bit different because you had the storage closet. But in things like that, that you have to consider the classroom that you're teaching in and what's the best position to safeguard the children.
Yes.
And you had more than one training on Code Reds, correct?
Prior to that, yeah.
And Mr. Peterson was at those trainings?
I think so. I always sit in the front, so I don't know who's in the back.
Okay, fair enough. Now, I'm going to show you another picture here. I'm showing you what's already been entered into as evidence of State's Composite 16. Where is this? Do you recognize this?
Yes.
Your friend Brittany Sinich, do you remember which classroom she was in?
Yes, I
can mark it.
She's the first or the second classroom.
You can mark it. It's probably either the first or the second. So where, what windows would that be, the first or the second?
It's somewhere over here.
Okay.
And some, I forget which ones are which.
Okay. How far was Mr. Peterson from Ms. Sinich's window?
Like over here.
You can mark it.
Like not on the grass, but.
So on the.
Picture.
Well, if I put this picture here, does that kind of help? You reckon?
Yeah, like over here.
So he was over there?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you can you see, and I'm going to zoom in here. Clear, it is not. Well, let me ask you this. Are you familiar with what kind of blinds Ms. Sinich's or the other classrooms had in the 1200 building?
What kind of what?
Blinds.
I don't recall.
Okay.
I can see they look like levelers there, right?
I'm sorry, say that
again. They look like verticals. They, right?
So would you say from that picture they look like vertical blinds?
It looks like vertical blinds.
Okay. Now, you stated earlier that you saw Mr. Peterson talking into the radios shortly before AP Porter announced Code Red.
Yes.
Do you know which radio he was speaking into, whether it's police radio or school radio?
No, I don't know which ones are which.
Are you familiar with how, with what the school radios look like?
Yes.
Are they attached to your shoulder or are they handheld?
They can be either or.
Okay. Do you know which one that Mr. Peterson had that day?
Yeah, I think he had one attached, but I also have seen him with one in his hand.
Okay.
So I don't know which one he was talking.
You do not recall which one he was talking to?
No.
One more trip. I got nothing further for this witness, Your Honor.
Based on that and redirect?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Hertzfeld, the prosecutor had you put an X on where your classroom is located across from the 1200 building. Yours is not the only classroom in that entire 700 building, correct?
Yes.
How many classrooms are there in that building, if you know?
Upstairs is probably like the same kind of quadrant, same thing, I think.
So it's a two-story building?
Yes.
And I think, did I hear 6 plus 6 approximately?
Probably, yeah.
And each classroom has about approximately how many kids?
In 700.
In the 700 building?
It depends. I'm an elective, so I can have a lot of kids.
Okay. The average amount in other classrooms?
In those particular classrooms, they're electives also, so they can have over 35, 40 kids per class.
Okay. And all of those classes would have to evacuate as well, correct?
Yes.
And they would have, do you know if they all head to the same general location that your kids head to?
No, they don't.
They have different places
to go? There's different places that we evacuate to.
Okay.
I just know of the few teachers that I see from the first floor, like when you see them going out together, you know who's in your area.
Did you ever see law enforcement come and interview your kids after this to determine where they thought the sounds were coming from?
Judge, I don't know. Objects outside the scope.
No, that's a rule. Go ahead, ma'am. You can answer the question.
Did I ever see them get?
Yeah.
I don't. I never saw them get interviewed. Like, they might have been interviewed separately, but I don't know firsthand.
Okay. And the prosecutor asked you about these driver's ed courses and the other programs at the school. Did you have firsthand knowledge of the relationship that my client built with the students at the school?
Firsthand knowledge? No.
Okay, you just heard?
You could see it.
What did you see?
You just know when students like have like a relationship with a teacher or an adult in there. You know, like they come and shake hands with them, or they, you know, they shoot the breeze with them at lunchtime. Like, that's what happens, because the officers get involved. They get involved with what's going on.
And one final thing, the prosecutor brought up your ear, mm-hmm. and your hearing. First of all, were you able to hear all of the questions I asked of you today?
Yes.
Did you hear all of the questions he asked of you?
Yes.
And when you're working with your students, are you using the same hearing? You know, you don't have to have any devices that help you with hearing?
Okay. No.
I mean, this is how you operate, right?
All the time.
And do you believe in any way that the hearing issue that you raised in any way affected your ability to hear the sounds of what you thought were firecrackers, correct?
I agree, because in actuality, if I felt like they were coming from that direction, it would have been really loud in that direction. But it's actually coming from back here where I don't hear well. Do you know what I mean?
And so
it's kind of bizarre, because this here was picking something up that was very loud coming from there. Make sense?
Do you believe that your hearing issue played any role in you believing that the shots were coming from the football field?
No.
Thank you.
Based on that, Amy Cross?
Just one question.
Go ahead.
You described the relationship that Mr. Peterson had with the students. Would you liken it to a relationship that your students had with teachers that they were close with?
It's different. It's different, because when you're in a relationship with a teacher, the kids have they have to get a good grade, they have to, you know what I mean? They have to, it's more of a casualness that like security guards or APs might have with students when they're saying hello to them or seeing what's up. Some of the people, sometimes at the time we had coaches, we had security staff that were coaches. So they were very friendly with the kids and they would take them under their wing, you know, that kind of thing.
So how the coaches or administrators were close with the children is how Mr. Peterson was close with the children, like a similar relationship.
I don't think so, yeah.
Okay. Nothing further.
Okay, defense is the witness excused.
Yes, sir.
And you may step down. Thank you very much. While she's doing that, ladies and gentlemen, real quick, 5-minute restroom break. Same admonition as always. Please do not discuss the facts of the case, the evidence, the witnesses, or the testimony amongst yourselves or anyone else. If you'll leave. Thank you. Okay, we're outside the presence of the jury. Real quick, 5-minute restroom break. We'll be in recess for 5 minutes.
Judge, can I ask you a question?
Yes, ma'am. Yep, everyone's here. Yes, ma'am.
Scheduling wise, we have two witnesses that are available here that.
That wraps up segment number 3 in our coverage of the trial of Scott Peterson. There is more to come. I'm Tony Bruschi. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our coverage.
This has been a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.